Hey, Tim. You know, subscriptions and ratings are really important.
Yeah, David? Why is that?
Well, because, Tim, the more subscriptions and ratings we get, the more people will like us. I mean, we'll be popular.
Really, David? Because that sounds a lot like high school to me.
Maybe a little, Tim. But you want more people to enjoy Johnny Has the Keys podcast, don't you?
I do, David. But this is beginning to sound a lot like a scripted commercial to me.
That's because it is, Tim.
Next thing you know, David, we'll be asking people to support us on our Patreon page.
Funny you should mention it, Tim, because that's exactly what I was going to do.
If that's the case, David, then you also need to explain that we are a fledgling podcast and need any support we can get, especially from those that enjoy what we're doing here.
I had fully intended to, Tim, so thanks for doing it for me.
And David, don't forget to tell them that as little as $1 a month helps keep our podcast going and may help to avoid even more annoying commercials in the future.
You just did, Tim.
Wait, is that a trick?
No tricks here. Johnny Has the Keys is on several major platforms, including iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Pandora, Podchaser, Podcast Addict, Stitcher, and Radio Public. Go there now, subscribe, like, and rate them. And then be sure to visit them at patreon.com/JohnnyHasTheKeys and show them you really care. This commercial has been brought to you by Vlad Dracul, Dr. Caligari, Walter Skinner, Dr. Zayas, Herbert West, Gort, Bubba Hotep, HAL 9000, and the People's Republic of Sokovia.
Podcast land. This is
We're back.
David.
I'm Tim.
And Tim's here with me. And we are we're excited to be back with you and talking and having some fun. And we're doing another episode of our 10-part series on each episode of The Haunting of Hill House.
Ooh, scary.
Very. But good scary. I mean, I'm the science fiction guy, you're the horror guy, but I'm definitely on your train this time because I love this entire season. This entire series was great.
Yeah, I was going to say, what a ride it is.
Yeah, so last week we talked about the first episode and the pilot, the premiere, essentially. And before we jump into episode two, I had a couple of observations I've had since thinking about that episode, and also a couple of questions for you.
Okay, yeah, I have a counter to something that you brought up last week.
Okay. You want to go first? You want me to go first? What do you want to do?
I was just going to say that you were kind of trashing the credits, and I don't mind them.
Really?
I especially love the music. I think the music is fantastic.
The music is. I have no problem with the music at all. I also like the fact that the music kind of builds to a point, then gets really, really quiet, and then kind of just goes to that last little chord section as it's showing the coming out of the doorknob and the door and all that. And like I said, I love that last shot. It looks like a great poster or a great cover of a novel.
With the doorknob?
With just the red room and
the
lights underneath it. Yeah.
Yeah. And right before that, here's an obvious key to throw at you. Right before that, the house turns into this big maze. It looks like the maze from the movie The Shining as well.
Yes. Yeah.
But I mean, that was a little obvious.
Yeah, and I just noticed this time watching episode two that it's not just a maze, it is the house, because there's little doorways and little windows all along the side of it that have lights in them and everything.
It's the Forever House.
Sort of, yeah. But I didn't, but I still, I just don't like that credit sequence. It reminds me too much of, he's so original in some of the stuff that he's doing directorially and writing and character development wise. And it was just seemed odd to go with an old stale kind of, here's some statues and yeah, they break open and it's all these slow montage pulls of a generic object kind of
Well, I
thing.
mean, it's very CGI and it is very Westworld, but I like the theme of the statues because statues play such a part in the overall series. I think it's kind of cool to see them like screaming and stuff. I think, I don't know, it's just creepy to me.
Yeah, and I don't mind the, I guess I don't mind the whole statue link to it, because the, I know in the novel they have a whole statuary area, and in the series, there's those two whole rooms that have a bunch of statues in them and everything, and upstairs there are more statues, that kind of thing. So I don't mind the statues as a presence, but again, it just reminds me of like Daredevil and Westworld and all these other credit sequences that are very similar. So,
Yeah,
but I'm
cheap,
glad you like it,
probably.
so that's fine.
Okay, so that was my little thing. What do you got?
My thing was a question for you. So
A question for me?
a question, and as because I didn't get to ask it last week, but as a writer, would you have done what Steve did? Would you have written about the family to make money?
Yes.
Okay.
I kind of already have.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's why I was curious about it. But okay, but then let me ask you, would you, 'cause you write nonfiction. You write nonfiction. He's writing fiction. So, I mean, you write fiction. He's writing nonfiction. So
Correct.
would you change things? Like he says, he tells Irene, he says, I'll embellish the story a bit. I change it. I always do. Meaning that he definitely changed Hill House because of the reaction of the kids, not only in the first episode, but later on, that obviously he's making stuff up. I mean, I think Shirley even says, you were asleep for 99% of it. You made all that up. So would you do that? Would you take your own family story, but then, I guess, lie about it, on in the book?
I don't know that I would ever, I would never be the kind of writer that, writes paranormal nonfiction, with the skepticism he has of not believing, but saying he believes to pub, all writers lie, but that's just because they're making stuff up. He's making stuff up to profit off other people's vulnerabilities, for lack of a better word. I mean, I wouldn't want to exploit people for profit, I guess. That's not my bag. The only reason I said what I said when I said yes is because with my first novel, since I knew I was learning the craft kind of as I was doing it, it was easier for me to focus on plot and narrative if I didn't so much have to develop the characters. So I plucked characters out of my life, including myself, that made it easier for me to focus on other aspects. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. That makes total sense. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean,
And I
he's
think.
another kind of writer. I mean, he's writing true, haunted house stories, and he doesn't even believe in ghosts because he says he's never seen one. So
Right.
I think that's kind of exploitive in a way. And I mean, I wouldn't hold it against him. I would make him change the names for sure. But I can see where Shirley, I can see why Shirley's pissed off about it. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And it's like blood money he's offering her as a recompense, Is that the right
Yeah,
word?
and
Compensation,
she
yeah.
even says it. Yeah, she says it's blood money,
Right.
and the line about if you do write this, you know the cost. Which, of course, is you're going to piss off Shirley, but then it's like, what doesn't, piss off
Yeah,
Shirley? So,
Shirley is a mad woman.
which is good because that's kind of the segue. I like the way we talked about how great Flanagan writes and directs, but I like the fact that basically these first, you know, four episodes of the series are focusing mainly on one particular sibling. So even though last, you know, the episode one was the pilot and it had so much information and a lot with Nell in it, it was mostly Steve's story, or his point of view kind of thing. Whereas this one, this episode two we're getting ready to talk about, was mostly Shirley. It was like her story,
yeah,
kind of thing. And but right before that, one last question I have for you. So
sure.
Remind me, in the are the twins in the novel? Are there twins in the novel as far as these paranormal investigators?
No. No, okay. All there are, okay, are there's like a head paranormal guy that's his name is Hugh Crane. That's the only connection there. And then there's Theodora, and it is just Theodora. You never hear her last name. And she is a psychic. And then you have Nell, who, and this is a little key for you for the novel. Nell is known as a child, she's got telekinetic powers of some kind, because as a child, she brought showers of stones down on her house, which is very similar to Carrie, the Stephen King novel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she's invited, because Hugh recognizes that she has a gift too. And then Russ Tamblyn's character Luke is just the heir to the mansion. So that's
so the Luke four. And Nellie names are from the novel, but their relationship is not, like, correct. Flanagan's doing it for this. Okay.
And there is a Mrs. What's her name? The caretaker. I can't remember. The
Dudleys.
The yeah. Dudleys. Yeah, they're there. And the only mention, and we haven't really got this deep in the series, but the only mention of an Abigail is from the builder of the house. I guess his name was Hill. I can't remember. He did have a daughter named Abigail. But she's only okay. mentioned. Interesting. You never see her. So, yeah.
So, see, I like that. I mean, I read something that King... the quote from Stephen King was something to the effect of, he usually hates revisionist sort of remakes and stuff like this, mm-hmm. but he really liked this because he thought Flanagan did such a good job and had so many homages to the original story.
I completely
and original
agree.
Novel. And I think that's good. I think in the fact that, okay, there is a daughter named Abigail, but in the novel it's the former owner's daughter. In the series it's the Dudley's daughter.
The caretaker.
You know,
daughter,
that kind
yeah.
of thing. So yeah, I like that he's doing that. And it almost makes it, I guess it almost makes it like Easter eggs. It almost makes, you know, if you know the novel, you're going, oh, I see what he did there. Kind
yeah.
of thing, you know.
Yeah, and briefly last week I said, and I think Stephen King feels the same way as I do, it's Mike Flanagan's love of the novel that shines in this production so much.
Oh, yeah.
That, I mean, his love and respect for the source material is why this is so good.
Yeah. So. And that's why, I mean, we'll get to it, I know, in the last episode or everything else, but that's why I'm very, you know, they haven't announced that there's going to be a season two yet, but I'm sure based on the popularity, they probably will. But then what would that be? You know, it's one thing to do Handmaid's Tale and continue the story. This is, you know, the Crane's story is basically told by the end of this series. So I'll be very curious to see how you pay homage to source material that's no longer there. You know,
I know.
Kind of
yeah, that's weird.
So, but anyway, let's, before we jump to, you know, episode 10, let's talk about episode two.
Okay.
Episode two, in brief, just like a synopsis, is basically it's the title of it is Open Casket. And it, like I said, I think it's again written and directed by Flanagan, so he did both things for it, and it's very Shirley focused. It's basically everything from her point of view. We learn a lot about Shirley, her family, her relationship to the other kids, mostly because it's how she, especially, but some of the other people in the family are dealing with the fact that Nell's dead. We get to hear how Shirley finds out. We get to hear how everybody reacts to it and the steps that Shirley takes, which are pretty kind of shocking, in my opinion. But what was your overall take before we do details? What was your overall take of this episode?
The thing that immediately leaps to mind again is the whole nonlinear thing. The way he goes from past to present is just masterful in this episode. You know, when she's the one of the things that pops into my head is like when she's applying the makeup to Nell's body and they cut and she's applying the makeup to Nell's face on her wedding day, things like that. They just knock me in the stomach.
I had that exact same note because I love this entire, if I was going to say to our gentle listeners, if you're going to watch this episode again, now watch it from the very beginning and think about transitions, because he is incredible in these transitions. I mean, cutting from a glass of milk here to a glass of milk feeding the kittens,
yes,
cutting from one funeral home, cutting from, you know, Shirley and her family's funeral home back to when Shirley was a kid at her mom's funeral in that funeral home. And like you said, the one I picked, the going from Shirley, the mortician, putting on Nellie's makeup to her putting on Nellie's makeup at her wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite was a triple, which is there was a section where Shirley's talking to her kids and she says, "Why don't you go and pick out your favorite picture of Auntie Nell?" And then it cuts to young Shirley putting the pictures of the kittens into the photo album and almost crying. Then it suddenly cuts back to Shirley over Nell's body looking at a picture of Nell before she starts the makeup. And I went, oh my God. And it's very interesting. His style changes like episode to episode. You know, so I think last week there was a lot of moving camera. There was a lot of cinematography that tracks people and moves people and moves around. This one is much more standard lockdown, straightforward shots and just holding on people's faces and seeing their reactions. And, you know, especially the actress playing Shirley, she did a phenomenal job with that whole grief all the way through this and trying to be strong and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But
both actresses, I mean, the little girl too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And we've said it, and I'm sure we'll say it 9,000 times before we're through with this series, but the casting and the performances for both the kids and the adults is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's just Emmy award winning in my opinion. And I hope they get it. Okay. Well, it started. So let's just step through it a little bit. It started with one of my favorite openings because it's just a shot at night, and suddenly it's that shot of Shirley sitting up saying, "Nellie's in the red room."
Yeah.
And I went, yes!
Yeah, I actually jumped. I went, whoa!
Yeah, yeah. And there are a few jump scares in this one that got me. I was going, okay, pretty good setup kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I liked that. I like the fact that, you know, she lays back down and it pans over and you see it's 3:03. So evidently that's going to become important. And I remember in episode one, when the dad wakes up, because they all wake up when Nellie dies, and the dad's clock said 3:03. So that must be the time when it happened.
The whole evacuation.
Yeah.
Which is very Amityville Horror, by the way.
Yeah. And so we know from, yeah, that's a good key, by the way.
Yeah,
that whole
it
run
just
away
occurred
from the house
to me.
At night.
Sorry, I had to blurt
yeah.
it out.
No, that's a great key.
Yeah, because I can't remember what the time was, but George Lutz kept waking up at a certain time. And I want to say it was the time that they all decided to flee.
And we said, you know, last week that another Amityville key was the whole red room thing.
Yeah.
Because there is no red room in the novel, but there was a red room in Amityville.
Speak about exploiting ghosts for money. That whole thing
yeah.
is something a Stephen might do, too.
And what was that? The Lund? Was that the name of the family? I think?
Lutz.
Piggy and
Lutz.
The Lutz family. Okay.
I think his name was George Lutz. L-U-T-Z.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, they claimed that thing was true for years and years. That's why I was so psyched about it when I was a kid. And then later you found out it wasn't true.
Right. Margot Kidder made it all up. But anyway,
so. In her crazy delusional mind.
Yes. But anyway, so from, you know, he's setting up from the very first scene, we realize, okay, this is going to be Shirley's episode. And like we said last week, Shirley is the stage of grief, which is anger. And we do see a lot of that in this episode. But we also see other layers to her. The next scene I have in my notes, the next scene is the scene with Max, the little boy, and he's talking about Grandma. And he's the same one said, I don't want to, you know, who told the ghost story in the first episode about Grandma comes to sits on my bed at night and she has no teeth, you know, kind of thing. And Shirley, almost like a Stephen kind of thing, explains it in a very, you know, I guess, I don't want to say mortician, methodical. But I guess in a very, yeah, a very practical way of saying, well, you know, you remember your grandma in a wig and you remember her taking her teeth out. So this is a way for you to see it differently, you know. And when the boy goes, no, they're not dreams. This is really happening. She doesn't believe it at all. And I have a quote here. She actually says the line, when you go up and look at the casket, it lets you cover all those things up. Which is kind of like, you know, it's like Shirley does. She keeps saying through this whole episode, I'm going to fix it. Which is actually what her dad said, too.
Yeah.
I can fix it. So that's, a thing she got from Hugh, but she also keeps it in her real life. Did you find it odd that they made her a mortician?
I did at first, but now not so much. And I do think, you know, that this episode is about her, the development of Shirley's obsession with making things right.
You know, it's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do have one thing that kind of was, I mean, I love, the whole funeral process has always been creepy to me as far as like, you know, the preparation of the body. And but how they overlaid it with her talking to the kid, I thought was well, really well done. But then I started thinking, since when do morticians counsel children on this shit? I mean, isn't that the parent's job? Why is this mortician having this conversation with? I know it's poetic license because they needed it for the show, but I don't. I've never heard of morticians coming out and saying, "Yes, you must go to the casket." That was weird.
Right, right. And my, you know, my father and grandfather were both morticians. And I don't ever remember them, you know, doing counseling or talking about counseling or anything else.
They're trying to upsell on that casket.
Yeah, yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, it's
no, you want the bronze.
Right.
You want the bronze four-seater. That's the best one, you know, and or whatever.
And the larger vault.
Much larger vault because, you know, that's where you're going to put a dead body. That makes perfect sense. Pay a lot of money for that. I did have a trivia thing I looked up. The actress that plays Shirley is actually extremely squeamish. She doesn't like blood. She doesn't like bugs. She doesn't like dead bodies. None of that.
Ooh.
And she said in an interview that this was extremely daunting for her to play. You know, she almost had dread about it the first couple of months before they shot the second scene, the second episode, just because she is definitely around a dead body for most of the episode.
She is really good. She reminds me of that woman that plays the queen in The Crown show on Netflix. Foy, is that her name? She was on Claire SNL Foy, a couple weeks back. Yeah, she's really good. We say that all the time about everybody in this. She's really good. This cast is really good.
We have to.
Yeah.
But she says, I'm going to fix her because, okay, did you find that decision odd? The fact that she decides she's going to do her own sister.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to me like that's some kind of ethics violation or something. I don't know if there is an ethic code to, you know, funeral directors or whatever, morticians, but it does seem to me, it's kind of like a surgeon performing on their sibling, maybe, Or,
Yeah,
I mean,
but
can
I don't.
surgeons do that? I guess they can. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think there's an ethics thing on it, but it was like a double whammy for me. First of all, to find out she works in a funeral home, which we saw last week, and I was like, it's kind of odd. But then this kind of justifies it. It's her way of fixing things, even so much so that her husband's saying, "You're giving too much stuff away. We're losing money," because she wants to help. Her way of helping people is, "I can fix it. I can make their last moments better. I can make their," but not a hospice thing. It's for the family, not for the person, which is kind of interesting because, we find out later on in the season, especially with Theo. Theo's also helping people, just in different ways. But that was the first whammy, and then the second one for me was, "And you're going to do your own sister." But then she justifies it, and she says, "I'm the only person that can do her justice, and I don't want anybody else to touch her, and I want to do it myself, and I want to fix her, and I want to make it right." And it's kind of like her way of saying, "I'm helping the family again." Because I think Shirley's character, especially in this episode, is always written, especially in this episode, but in the entire series, is written like she's the mom surrogate. She took over when mom wasn't there. She makes all the decisions. She tells Steve what to do at times, and she says, "We're not going to put up with it," and blah, blah, blah. But so I really enjoyed all of that part, and the fact that he wrote it in a way that you at first go, and then you go, "Oh, okay, yeah, okay, I can see that. I can see why she's doing that." Like to your point earlier about juxtaposition and going back and forth in time, we do jump a lot in this episode back to Hill House and see Hill House in a different way than the night they all left. It's much more of a
It's a
how they lived that summer kind of thing. We don't know how long they were there, but we know it was probably for a few months,
Yeah.
sort of thing. But this is obviously near the beginning of their stay. They're still trying to get into the Red Room. We now see a little bit more of Olivia. So we see that she's an architect, and I liked her whole. Did you like the whole section where she's talking to Shirley about what a house is? And
The one about the house having a heart, yes. Yes.
yes, yeah.
Did you see the ghost standing behind her?
There was one. That is correct.
It was very brief. I had to actually go back and pause it. It's only in one quick shot, but it's behind the mother when Shirley first gets there, and she's like, I think it's a she. She's standing in the doorway. It's very dark. I was like, whoa.
And did you in that same scene, because Shirley talks about every house needs a heart, every house, the walls are bones and the pipes are veins. It's a great allegory, especially considering we're talking about an entire series about a house.
Like it's a living organism. And actually, Shirley Jackson kind of describes the house as a living organism in the very first paragraph of the book. And here the mother is doing it in the show, in
Yeah,
her
yeah.
own
Again,
words.
that homage thing done so well. And did you see then when Nellie comes in to ask about a tea party? By the way, Nellie, so cute. The
I
little
know.
one, the little Nellie is so cute.
Nobody will play with me.
But yeah, she comes in going to want to play a tea party, wanted to have a tea party, and there's a ghost in that shot out in the garden in the back.
Oh, I didn't
There's a
see that
ghost
one.
in the in yeah in the
I
two
thought that
shot
was
of
just
that one.
somebody that worked there or like one of the parents or something. I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah. A great line coming up in that scene because she says, "Okay, you girls can go out and play, but when I flash the porch light, that means come home."
Yeah, twice.
And twice, yeah.
Yeah.
And she makes Shirley repeat it, she makes Nell repeat it, and then later on, Shirley makes Luke repeat it, and so it's definitely, we need to notice this, and it's because it becomes so important.
Yeah.
Not only in this show episode, but later on. Love that though. When I
On a side note, we Dennis and I have trained our dogs to do that. When we flick our
well, when you flash the porch
when we
light?
flick our outside lights, they know to come in.
No way.
Yeah.
Serious?
Well,
Oh
one
my
of them is
God.
old and deaf, so we can't call her.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, then that kind of makes sense. She's looking using visual cues.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
that way we don't have to scream and annoy the neighbors.
Okay, so then we going through the episode. So then they go out. You know, we follow. Now we're following young Shirley, and she's taking her Polaroid pictures, and she's recording different things around the grounds. And Nell is still following her around, wanting to have a tea party, and an homage trivia kind of thing. So Shirley says, "Why don't you go ask Theo if she wants to play?" And she's taking pictures as she goes and talks to Theo. And naturally, of course, you know, Theo's the cynic in the background with the toboggan saying no. But Theo's sitting on a stone wall reading a book. What book do you think she was reading?
She
Did you
was
catch it?
reading The Lottery and Other Stories by Shirley Jackson.
Yes!
Yeah.
Was good. Yes, I mean that's kind of on in the on the nose, but I really liked it. I thought it was. I was going, yes, there you go.
It was an old copy, too. It looked like it was from the 70s. Yeah.
So well dated with what they did with it. Well, before we get to kittens, we've got. She talks to Luke and says, "You know, make sure you come in." He says, "Yeah." When they flash the porch light twice, and then Luke looks up and we see Abigail for real.
Yeah, for the first time.
Standing there against the cemetery, the fireplace or whatever.
Yeah.
And
I think it's the first
so
time. It wasn't that the first time we see her?
yeah.
Okay.
First time we see her. The only other time we've seen her was in the runaway that night when he says he saw her in the
Oh,
window.
that's right. That's right. Yeah.
But again, you know, it's this ghost that's standing in the woods that comes out even in daylight, just like the ghost behind Olivia and the ghost behind Shirley. So it's that kind of the ghosts are all over. And then we go to to kitten time.
Well, what I thought was weird is that before she gets to the shed, there's a graveyard there. It's like,
Yeah.
how long has this house been there? I mean, there's a bit pretty good sized graveyard there.
Well, and it kind of goes back to that old feeling of the old manor homes where they had their own private cemeteries, you know, because I did kind of freeze frame it and look, and all of all of the names are hills, so it's like Jonah Hill or Jacob Hill or
Jonah Hill.
whatever, and yeah, oh, maybe not Jonah
That's great.
Hill. He lost too much weight. We had to put him in the grave. But yeah, it's they're all hills in the cemetery. Then she hears the kittens, gets scared by the what we think, I swear to God, I thought it was like a mummified cat, and then it turns out to be a wasp nest around a Halloween
I
nest.
thought it was
Kind
a
of a
dead body. I thought there was a face.
Oh, okay. See, I saw a face, but I thought it was a cat.
I
You know,
thought
I
it was
thought it
going to
was
be
like
just
a
a, you know how they would show a ghost in the background? I thought, well, there's a ghost right there. Maybe she doesn't see it. And that horrible face. And it actually wasn't a face at
Yeah.
all. Or it was a mask.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a mass that had been had a wasp nest around it, which is kind of interesting. We get the mention of the dogs, and Mr. Dudley says there are no dogs, and he goes, "Oh yeah, there are. The kids hear them every night," kind of thing. They wake them up. So we know the hauntings have already started on the kids. It's not just Nell waking up with Bent Neck Lady. There's other things. There's these dogs. There's Abigail. So we know that the house is already manipulating people, I guess. Then we're back to present day in a pretty cool scene I kind of liked, which was the whole Shirley trying to get her, showing how out of touch she was because she doesn't know what who Daredevil is, and wants her son to make his own Halloween costume as opposed to buying him one, you know. And he's like, "Mom, I want a costume, not a craft project." You know, it's like,
Yeah, you're
which I
killing me,
thought
Mom.
was, yeah, you're killing me, you're killing me. But he also, you know, again, well, clever writing, but he does that throwaway line where he says, you know, his buddy Joey or Bobby or whomever says that if his mask doesn't look right, the ghosts will get him. And Shirley goes, "There's no such thing as ghosts." And then they just kind of skip over it, you know, which is cool. But we also in this scene get to see for the first time that Shirley has a an entire architectural model of the Forever House.
Yeah, I just have a question. Is do you think that's her forever house or the one that Olivia was create. Isn't the mother's name Olivia?
Yeah.
Because she was drawing the blueprints of one, but Shirley actually has the model. And I'm just wondering if that's what Shirley thinks she's going to build with money she makes from her business. Or if that was actually the one that her mother built.
Well, we don't...
I guess we know.
We don't ever see the model being built. So my assumption was that the model happened after the events of Hill House.
Okay.
And I think Shirley either had it made, which kind of makes sense, and or the father may have even made it for Shirley and given it to her.
Oh, no. As a remembrance of her mom. I think Shirley made it because Shirley fixes things and it never happened. I think Shirley did it.
Yeah. But I do think it's, I don't think it's Shirley's house. I think it is Olivia's plan. I think
it could be.
It's the actual forever house. Because it means so much to, because later on it means so much to Shirley.
Yeah.
When, you know, something happens, sort of thing. So I do think that. But I like the fact that we get a glimpse of it here and we're kind of thinking, oh, wow, so she is holding on to stuff from her past. And we get it worse because then the father of Max, the grandmother, whose mother died, he comes in with a box and we're suddenly taken back to kitten in a box kind of thing. You know, he has a box that obviously scares Shirley because she doesn't even talk so much that the husband has to say, I'll take this downstairs or whatever. Then one of the oddest cuts, but I know why he kind of did it, I think, was we cut to that whole scene. So we have, for the first time ever, we end up seeing the whole family together, all the siblings. And it's because Shirley and Steve, obviously the most, I guess, affluent of the kids, are paying for Luke to go to rehab.
Right.
And they react to the fact of, you know, it's so expensive, and then they go out and talk to him, and it's all of them in such perfect, it's having seen the series once and then going back and seeing this, I went, okay, see, that's such a great setup for all five of them.
You know, I have a note here too, is they just look like a family. They look like they are a real family. It just, I mean, you don't think they're actors at all.
Right. And this is the first time we get to see Luke and we get to hear Luke speak and everything. Because we only saw him sit up in the first episode. Mm-hmm. And in this one, and the scene, well, the scene with Steve where he's saying it's not what you think. But this is really, you know, him and the family other than Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, you know, he hugs everybody and he hugs Nellie last, of course. And Nellie has that childlike quality to her. She has lines like, you know, they have horses here. There's horseback riding. You know, it's so childlike.
Right.
Whereas Shirley's so motherly. Shirley's so, you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Theo's, you can do this. And Steve doesn't really say anything. Because you can tell he already doubts. Mm-hmm. Doubts about everything.
I've said it before, and I'll probably say it a million times. You know, Ghost and Horror brought me to this series, but it was getting wrapped up in the family drama that held me. And this was probably the first of that. When I, you know, on the first go around of watching this series, this was probably the episode that hooked me, and it was with that scene and the drama. You know, I said to somebody the other day, I said, "It's This Is Us with Ghost," you know, basically, because you've got a lot of family drama going on here.
Yeah, and it's realistic drama. It's not played up like, you know, a soap opera, Gilmore Girls, or something like that. It's very realistic. You know, I said last week, and I'll, you know, to me, I'll say it again this through the series. I think it's the best portrayal of an addict and addiction and families with addiction that I've seen in a realistic way.
He's going to rip you off. He's probably going to break into your house and steal your money or whatever. Yeah.
And you know, he's not doing it maliciously. He genuinely loves you. He genuinely doesn't want to hurt you, but he has no choice.
Right. And he knows you won't press charges.
Yeah, well, there's that too, probably.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that Shirley is supporting him and wanting to pay for it and wanting to help him out and hoping help him get clean.
She's trying to fix it.
But you can still see that all five of them are scarred.
Yeah.
Something happened, and we don't know what it is yet. We'll find out through the series, but they're all five scarred in their own way. I also found it very, you know, you're talking about transitions. It's interesting. We cut from them watching Luke walk off to his, what I guess is maybe his first rehab or first real one kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so.
And then it suddenly cuts, and we're at dinner, and Shirley, her husband, and Theo are all drinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought, oh, okay. So we each have our own addictions. But you also see Theo's wearing the gloves.
Yeah.
And again, we don't know why. We just know she's wearing gloves. Mm-hmm. And she always does. And they make a comment of the fact that Shirley's daughter now has wearing gloves because she wants to be like Aunt Theo kind of thing.
Oh, I think I know your key now. Anyway, I just wrote it down because it just came to me, but go ahead.
Oh, you may not. I mean, I don't know.
Okay. I just remembered something. Go ahead, though.
Okay.
I'll do it at the end.
So we see her in the gloves. We have our first, like I said, it's the first cool trend, not the first, but one of the coolest transitions where we cut from getting the glass of milk to suddenly feeding the kittens with the glass of milk.
Yeah.
And then we go again to one of our scare scenes with the girls in bed and all the banging on the walls.
That's great.
Yes. That's
so intense.
And the timing of it built so well and their reactions of it work so well. And even afterwards, when it suddenly stops, the dad comes in and they go, how could you not, you know, Shirley's angry.
I know.
How could you not hear it?
You know what I kept expecting her to say?
What?
Why do you have that scary statue right outside my door? Because you could see that damn thing standing outside her door. That would creep me the fuck out if I was a kid.
Look at these doorknobs. They're scary. Everything about this house.
Everything about this house is scary.
And you keep saying, don't be scared.
Right. How could you not hear that, though? It is funny how she gets mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's her character, but it's great.
And there was another jump scare there because Daddy is comforting them, and all of a sudden he turns into like a, you know, his face freezes and he gets all monstery, and it cuts to Shirley waking up from the nightmare, and then she gets the call, you know. And so I thought that was really cool the way he did that. He gave us a scare. And then suddenly we cut to Shirley getting the call from Steve about Nell. And
then she gets mad at him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I told you that she was in trouble. I told you, she, you know, that sort of thing, which is very, to me, very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Look for blame somewhere, you know. But her performance all from then on, all the way through the show, really, but definitely from that moment that on the call, the way he just keeps on her face the whole time, and then from then on, the way she handles all of her scenes is so well done.
Mm-hmm.
She's so strong. We're I'm trying to look just at notes, because then we go back. There's a lot of back and forth from then on. So we go back to Hill House, and one of the kittens is dead. And then we have the great burial scene. So now we know why Shirley was scared of the box, because mom put, you know, kitten in a box kind of thing to bury it. Dad's, you know, it's a very family thing. Dad digs the grave. Mom helps prepare the body and the daughter does the eulogy
kind of thing. So it's very pet cemetery. What did you say at the very beginning? Now we know why Shirley does what with the box.
Remember when Max's dad comes in and says, I've got all the jewelry from my mom. I couldn't think of what to pick out, so I just brought it all. And Shirley can't even walk to him and talk to him because he's holding this box.
Okay.
Like a jewelry box.
I didn't pick up on that. Okay. That's why I was wondering, because I figured it was tied in somewhere, but I didn't see that. Okay.
Yeah, and then now we know why is because, you know, there could be a kitten with a bug in the box or whatever, but yeah. You know, that was which was also kitten. A good scare.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a good scare there. I liked the dialogue in that scene. I liked the fact that Hugh is so nice in saying, "Do you want to say anything?" Some people do. It's called a eulogy. You know, and the mom is saying she has all those great allusions to stories. And one of the keys, one of my first keys that I got out of that one was when she says, when we die, we all turn into stories, which reminded me of the Westworld scene at the very end with Dr. Ford, who says, Mozart, Chopin, and Beethoven never died. They just became music.
Yeah.
You know, we live on after if people tell our stories, if people remember us in storytelling and how important stories are.
Mm-hmm.
The key that I was going to surprise you with that I don't know if you caught, or it may be just me because I'm weird.
Oh, okay. Then it must not be the one. Okay, go ahead.
Olivia's telling that story, you know, and she's telling all about stories, and she's encouraging her to do the eulogy, and she's wearing that hat. It's kind of a sun hat and the reflection of the sun on her face and everything else. The first thing that occurred to me was Bonnie Bedelia in Creepshow. At the cemetery.
Yeah.
Because she has a hat just like that. God. And I thought, and I don't know why I remembered Bonnie Bedelia out of anybody in that.
It's not Bonnie Bedelia. It's great old Aunt Bedelia. Yeah. Bonnie Bedelia is from Die Hard and Salem's Lot.
No way. So who's that actress then?
That actress that played Bedelia?
Yeah.
I don't know. Her name is Bedelia. She's an old lady. Bonnie Bedelia is still around. Yeah. She played John McClane's wife in Die Hard.
That's Bonnie Bedelia.
And she was Susan from Salem's Lot. That was like one of the first things she ever did. I love Bonnie Bedelia. But you're right. The name is correct because it's dotty old Aunt Bedelia. And I was thinking that the house reminds me a little bit of the same segment from Creepshow because there's a graveyard in the background. You know, and that's how that whole segment plays out. You know, the old guy crawls out of the grave and kills Bedelia. But anyway, that's funny that you brought that up because I was thinking the same thing only in another section of the thing.
Okay.
So Creepshow twice. Okay. Weird.
Two creep shows in one, so we definitely keyed on that one.
Yeah. I've saved some keys for later, though, so we will have some.
an aesthetic that I liked is I like the funeral home set a lot. It becomes really important later in the series, but the fact that they establish it in this one, and she's talking to Max about, I'll go with you, and we'll go up and watch your grandmother, and then it cuts to her and the other funeral director saying, I'll take you up there. And we realize that she's going up to see her mom because it pans over and it's that picture of Olivia. So this is the first real, you know, real in your face, mom died.
And she does not want to go.
Mm-mm.
And I wrote down, do you think Shirley thought a bug would crawl out of her mom's mouth?
God. See?
Because it was after that scene with the kitten. You know?
See, that's where your mind would go. Your mind would do that. I would not think that, but that's now it's got me creeped out.
I mean, well, you know, she had it happen to her with the kitten, and now she does not want to go anywhere near her mother's body. And I'm like, she thinks a bug's going to crawl out of her mom's mouth.
Mm-hmm. But it does lead us to now we have the whole, it kind of supports the whole reason of why she chose that profession, because she goes up with the guy, sees her mom, and says, you fixed her. And he says, that's what I do. I fix people. And that's the same thing that, you know, she says later on and that she's doing for her own sister.
And it's a way of confronting her own fears, too.
But her face, the little child actress's face, was great on that walk up and seeing her mom's body and the way she, I mean, it's just very, very strong performance.
And like what that mortician did, just saying, would you like me to walk with you or whatever? You know, that made more sense to me than her whole counseling that kid at the beginning. I was like, okay, I can see that.
Therapy section.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, mortician / therapist for, you know, kid psychiatrist or whatever. It was weird.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it is all a part of her. You know, she's teaching him what she went through. So I kind of get it. And it is poetic license too for Flanagan.
Yeah.
So.
And then we cut back again. We're with the family back at Hill House, but now it's the mom counseling Shirley, Olivia counseling Shirley about, kittens die kind of thing. And I love the fact that she had the line about kittens shouldn't be without their mommies. Because that kind of creeped me out. I was going, oh, that has some big, that's some big foreshadowing for later. But then she has a migraine, and she and Hugh have that kind of fight.
That little bitchy fight.
Yeah. But very realistic. He says it in such an offhanded way. I wish I'd been part of that conversation. And she immediately gets mad and goes, oh, so you're saying you would have done it different or whatever. But then she has the line that there's two lines like that hit me both at the same time, like within two scenes, and I thought of you. And one was in this scene where she goes, you let her keep a box of diseased kittens in her bedroom.
Yeah.
I thought of you. I said, I bet Tim Smith loves that line. And then the other one is later on, we can jump to it. The other one was when
I've got some lines jotted down that I'm not sure where they apply, but they're very funny. One is, Shirley is a bitch, but I totally respect her. And one is, this is so sad in all caps. I'm like, so there was a part of it that really got me somewhere coming up soon. You know what it is? The sad part is the wedding thing where she bribes Luke not to come or
Oh,
whatever.
see,
That's
that
the part that
just
got
killed
me.
me.
Yeah.
That just, oh, that just, well, we'll get to that in a second, but because I just, the other line that I was thinking of reminded me of you was in that next scene, and she's on the phone with Steve, her brother, saying, you need to get here. And Steve's like, well, we got, and she goes, no, Luke needs to be here. And she's going, well, he's going, we tried to find him. He checked himself out of rehab. We don't know where he is. And she says, you know what I am right now, Steve? I'm elbow deep in our sister's chest
Yes.
cavity, and all you have to do is find two grown men. So find them.
And I love it when she starts saying, do you know what happens when you get a body that's been autopsied? They have all the
Oh, yeah.
guts in a bag, and she just starts pulling these out of Nell, and I'm like,
Yes.
holy fuck, this is so intense.
And it was interesting because I thought that arc right there, I thought his writing again and her performance, because she uses her anger to get it started, to do what she has to do. But then when she finally has her breakdown and just is literally leaning on her sister's body sobbing, oh God, that got me. That was just so much. I did think it was a unique choice that, because she's doing the autopsy, she's starting the mortician's work, and she sees her kids in the doorway. So she goes and talks to her own kids, but she never touches them. She never hugs them. And I started thinking, I'm going to look for that for the rest of the series because I haven't seen her touch or hug her kids at all. And that's interesting that she's that walled off
It's very
from.
Theo-like too. Theo doesn't touch people.
We don't know why yet, but obviously she doesn't.
She wears gloves.
And then we get to, like you said, we get to that great cut from her doing Nell's body and makeup to suddenly her doing Nell's wedding. And then, like you said, the scene that got me, I could, oh, could, okay. What do you think that was the right choice?
I don't know. I mean, he was fucked up. I mean, his face looked terrible.
And her saying, this is Nell's day and you're not going to mess it up with your shit and everything.
Well, I mean, I would want to say, you know what? Yeah, just, stay in the back or, don't make a scene. But the thing is we don't know his history. He has perhaps made scenes in the past, where he was
Yeah,
strung
but they're
out or something.
twins.
Huh?
I mean, it's a twin thing. They're twins.
I know.
You know, that's just, I could not believe that she wouldn't at least even tell Nell, Luke wanted to be here, but he couldn't, or something.
Right.
Because she doesn't, you know, even she doesn't even acknowledge it when Nellie says it's almost perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, and we know immediately that's what she means.
Mm-hmm. And she's trying to fix things. I'm going to be saying that a lot.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I'm conflicted about that.
I am too. And I don't know. I don't know how I would resolve that. I mean, I would almost want to say, come with me and take him back to Nell and let her make the decision. I don't know. But then again,
I think
then
she
you're
knows Nell will
day.
Say stay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not fair. It's just the whole thing is just a fucked up mess and there really is no solution.
But so realistically played. It's so well, so like a family would be. And you can see that Shirley's sort of conflicted about it, but she's going to do it. She's the mom now. She's going to make Nell's day important or whatever.
She's like, how can I end this fast? Oh, money. And she just starts pulling out money. Yeah.
And that's because they know that's the only way to speak to Luke at that stage. That's all he cares about is his next fix. You know?
Yeah.
And she even says, the bank is closed or whatever. You know, she has a line about, you're cut off. This is it. You know, you can buy drugs with the rest of it. I don't care anymore kind of thing. So it's a break not only between Nell and Luke, but between Shirley and Luke. And kind of sad. I guess she feels pissed off because she's been paying, $6,000 a month, which is crazy. And he's checking himself out and getting high. But then, so we're near the end of the episode. So then she has her breakdown. But as she's finally leaving, we get that, you know, Flanagan does a great job with the scares again. We get her mom literally on the slab in the mortician's room beside Nell.
Yeah, she's just appeared in the dark. Yeah, just laying there.
Yeah. And does the sit-up thing and has the cataract white eyes and is really creepy and it's, you know, that kind of thing. So that was a good scare for me.
And she's holding that box.
Yes.
I have your kitten box for you.
And you can hear the kitten in it, you know. Yeah, Stephen King would have him say, here's your kitty.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
I wrote it down. Here's your kitten.
And then we get the very end.
Yeah, it's classic.
She is great. That one tracking shot of just showing her walk away through the room and turn the light out, in the next room, turn the light out, go up the steps, turn the light out, and then right in the foreground is the forever home and the porch light blinks.
Yeah.
And I went, yes!
Yeah.
That is great.
Yeah.
So both endings of the first and second episode are great.
Yeah,
the first ending with Steve there, and then this ending with the mom saying, essentially, come home. So my question is, who blinked the light?
The ghost.
Okay.
I don't know.
The ghost from Hill House?
Well, I mean, the ghosts are around. Maybe it was Nell.
But we haven't seen any ghosts in, like, the real world.
We have.
Present.
Nell was in Steve's apartment at the end of the first episode.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And now
her body's
at the funeral home, so it could have been her or the mother. I bet it was
the
mother.
I had the thought of either it's either Nell or it's Olivia.
Yeah.
You know, and because Olivia still wants them to come to Hill House.
Right. And it was Olivia's idea about the flashing light. She's the one that mentioned it earlier. So it was probably her.
Right, which makes sense. That makes sense. So key-wise, like I said, I had the Bedelia key, Auntie Bedelia. But I didn't have a lot of other keys and influences in this. I think he tells such a compelling story. I couldn't see where you taking stuff from other than the source material.
Right.
You know. What were some of the ones that you had?
Last week we tied them in and discovered that a lot of our keys were actually from ghost movies. I only have one from that's ghost themed, and it's not a movie. Well, it is a movie, but it's in the book, not the movie. And it's The Wasp Nest. A wasp nest plays a big part in Stephen King's The Shining book.
I'd forgotten that.
Jack finds one on the roof and gets stung, and he bug bombs it and makes it, you know, just a nest and no bugs, and gives it to Danny, and then the wasps come back later on. And I thought, oh, well, that's kind of interesting. I don't know that that's an accident, considering that this man is directing the sequel to The Shining. So,
Interesting.
yeah, I thought that
I
was
had not thought of that.
interesting. And then overall, just a key in general with haunted house films, it's like haunted houses are created to destroy families. Is that like a motif in haunted house fiction or movies? It's like they're an organism that destroys families. That's what it seems like. In most,
Could be. That's kind of true because well, the most compelling ghost stories are ripping, even if it's not a family, like even a couple, and one of them's haunted and the other one's not, you know, or one of them's possessed and the other one's not.
Well, and I can name a bunch right now. I mean, Burnt Offerings immediately comes to mind. That house destroys a
I would agree
family
with that.
every summer. And of
I
course,
would
The
agree with
Shining.
that. I think that's a great one.
Yeah, what else?
That's
I don't
interesting.
know. It's just a common theme, it seems like. Okay, and now here's some funny ones. I wrote down Evil Dead Kitten and Evil Dead Dad. Because both those jump scares you were talking about, like when that kitten, when she's holding it, its eyes start bulging out and it looks like one of the Evil Dead
Oh, God.
monsters.
Yes, it did. It looked like, especially Army of Darkness, kind of.
And then when the dad is sitting on the bed and his mouth gets really long and his eyes go white, he looked like something out of the Evil Dead too. So
Yeah,
it
he
was
looked
like
like one
some,
of the Deadites.
yeah, it's kind of like a special effects key where they're like, let's make it look
Yeah.
like a Sam Raimi thing.
Just for Sam, we'll do this. Yeah, I could see that. Those were good ones.
Another, this is the one that I thought of that I started laughing about while we were talking, is the scene where Theo is with them at the dinner table and Shirley's daughter is sitting next to her wearing like the exact same gloves, like she's imitating her. Because she says, where did you get the gloves? And she said, Walmart or something. I can't remember what it was. And then they start. She doesn't want to eat her Brussels sprouts. Theo shows her how she can put one in a spoon and kind of catapult it over her shoulder. And I just started thinking, this is like Roy Scheider in Jaws when he's making the faces with the little boy, and the little boy is mimicking him. And the little girl is mimicking Theo. She has the same gloves on and she starts flipping the Brussels sprouts too. I just thought it was kind of like a nice little Jaws Spielbergian tie-in
Yes,
as
that's
well.
awesome. Because Theo even winks at her. You know, it's kind of like we do this,
Yeah.
right? And then Theo's the one that actually gives her the cookie because she asks later on, "Can I have a cookie?" And her mom says, "Did you eat all your food?"
Yeah,
You
exactly.
know, and
And you know Theo's just, she don't care. She's like, of course she didn't. I taught her how to get rid of it.
Auntie Theo will always come to help you.
I was hoping they would show Shirley walking around later picking up Brussels sprouts off the floor.
That would have been good.
Going,
That
God
would have
damn
been
it,
good.
what is this?
And blaming it on the sun, of course. Yeah.
So, but
Cool.
that's all I had key-wise.
I still think it was a great episode. It didn't let down at all. You know, I was thinking, oh, those second episodes sometimes can be, you know, bad. But this one was definitely a Shirley episode. It was definitely great. Kept up the energy and also had the scares, but also such great family dynamic.
Yeah, I think the family dynamic was the hook in this one. I think this was the episode they said, oh, we're going to get you to, you know, we're going to make you an addict with this episode. You know, you're going to get wrapped up in this.
I didn't really catch it the first time I watched it until the fourth episode, but you know, the first four episodes are about one of the siblings, but then it makes me excited because next week's will be Theo, who's one of my favorite characters. So that one will be good to do.
And then
And
after the five episodes about siblings, you have the sixth episode, which is like the best episode because it
Oh
is
yeah.
full out, balls out, scary.
And it's is that the two storms one? And that's well, we may need a couple hours to talk about that one because I love that episode.
That one's a goodie. Definitely. They all are, but that one stands out.
Yeah. Okay, well, next week we will cover Theo's story with regards to Hill House, and there'll be more of us saying how incredible it is and great and awesome. If you haven't watched the series, you should before you listen to us talk about it.
Or we're going to tell you everything about it.
Right. Or you need to, you know, watch it again with us right before, and then you can walk it through.
I do have to say that I am really, really enjoying it the second time around.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more fun to go back and pick up on things that you may have missed the first time around.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm also intentionally waiting, which I did the first time too, you know, because I have that whole thing about, I don't know if binge watching is the best thing for people, because I like to give it time to think and to talk to people about it and to let it gestate before you go to the next episode. So that's helping too a little bit, of keeping some distance from it and going, oh yeah, oh, okay, I forgot that, or yeah, I see that now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, cool. I'm enjoying doing this with you. It's our first series, so we're having fun.
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right. Well, listeners, make sure you email us, like us, subscribe, play, do whatever. Let us know, hear from you. And thanks for listening.
Yeah, it was great being here.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you.